Your healthy radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
The new competitive pressures that people feel from globalization, from the integration of worldwide financial markets and production change has put those American workers in a much more competitive position than they probably have been in a long time, more than they expected to be. And so I think this does drive a lot of anxiety. And so there's a lot of political juice to be gotten out of, well, it's not our fault. It's these, you know, scheming Chinese, or it's these, you know, sneaky Mexicans coming across the border and stealing our jobs, because we all know, you know, guys in Long Island want to be out picking avocados.
You are listening to Healthy Radio Addiction, the Laura Ingraham Show. That's my friend Sonny Sweeney, a phenomenal album called Trophy. You want to get it, go out, do yourself a favor, buy it, listen to it. It's a song called Pass the Pain. I feel like I'm old Sonny sitting at a bar. It's a bartender. Give me another drink. So if I have to listen to Kevin Williamson, his smug elitist at National Review, for one more moment. Again, another person who got it wrong in 2016, now sitting on the set of MSNBC getting all the accolades because he once again is saying, oh, well, the middle class, they're just too stupid to realize how good they have it under globalization. They don't understand. They're blaming the Mexicans and the Chinese. They're happy to support a candidate who just kicks off the responsibility to someone else. Oh, it must be one of those horrible Mexicans, right? That's because they're just a bunch of racist yahoos, those middle-class voters who turned out for Trump.
I think it's status anxiety. You have a situation in which you have particularly men, particularly blue-collar men, looking at the myth of what working-class life was like in the post-war era, the 1950s and 1960s. This story that's not entirely true, where you could just get out of high school and go to a factory and make enough money to support a family and buy a house and retire and get the gold watch at the end and all that.
Well, I said not entirely true. He went on from there and extended the thought, but it's not really true. It's just kind of a fantasy that things were better when you actually could, you know, get a decent job and support your family without working three jobs, including fast food and everything else you do, even though you're a grown man with a skill. But the time before they shipped your job overseas, that you shouldn't want that back. You shouldn't want that era back. You're just a dumb person. Status envy. How many of you suffer from status envy? You'd much prefer to be like someone like Kevin Williamson on the set of MSNBC with Joe and Mika. And, you know, sitting around writing your columns every week for National Review that few people read. How many of you are really you're very, very status conscious? I don't think people have status envy. I think they just want the government to work for them and not for the interests merely of these big global corporations or, you know, the few who have profited off of America's decline. I found that exchange, I really want to hear from you all on this. I found that exchange to be revealing. But isn't he the same one? He and that David French are the ones who basically said that all those people in upstate New York who have lost their jobs should just die. They just go off and die. Move, just move. You shouldn't want your community to, you know, have these types of manufacturing jobs back. That era's gone. But that's condescension. It's Kevin Williamson, again, no one knows who he is. It's like not a well-known writer or anything, but he does represent a certain mindset that has infected politics in both parties, the establishment politics in both parties, where the middle class, the blue-collar workers, the way he even says blue-collar.
I think it's status anxiety.
Status anxiety. It's like performance anxiety, status anxiety. So they're not worried about putting their kids through college. They're worried about their status, really? You know who the most status-conscious people are where they live? In the Acela Corridor. Out at the Hamptons or in Manhattan or in Boston or in D.C. or in L.A., San Francisco, Silicon Valley. These are the most status-conscious people ever. Probably the least status-conscious are the people who work in the factories, Kevin. They're the people who go off and fight these wars that you and a lot of the neoconservatives want us to constantly be fighting. So I'm sick of these people looking down their nose at blue-collar people. I come from blue-collar people. I have more in common in my heart and in my mind, the way I think about the country, with the blue-collar people than I'll ever have with the likes of most people in Washington, D.C. I don't even know why I live here. Honestly, I think about this. Why do I even live here? I just built a house. I don't know why I did that. I mean, why am I not? I should just go live in Montana or something. It's harder to do the show if I can't see James, though. So that's hard.
We all know, you know, guys in Long Island want to be out picking avocados.
Oh, they're all lazy. Oh, that's the other thing. They're all lazy because we somehow didn't build a country without slave labor, illegal immigrant style. I don't know what he did for his summer jobs, but I actually did pick fruit in the summer. What did old Kevin Williamson do? I don't know what the heck he did, but that would be actually be a good question. Have you ever done manual labor? Let's get Craig. See if Craig Shirley can come on. I want him to sound off on this. That in the there's another sound, but I want to save it if he can come on. I don't want to play it until he can come on. But you need a condescending. This is why Trump won. This is what they don't understand. Trump won because of condescending snots like Williamson. Oh, you people! You think you had it so good in the 50s and 60s? You didn't have it good. Look at you could buy all this cheap plastic junk from China at Target now. Your life should be really good.
There's a lot of political juice to be gotten out of, well, it's not our fault. It's these, you know, scheming Chinese, or it's these, you know, sneaky Mexicans coming across the border and stealing our jobs.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Show. They think you're stupid. They think your views are stupid. They think your educational pedigree is not up to snuff. They think you don't know anything about history. They think you can't govern. You can't be trusted to vote, frankly, and pick someone to run for president. The elites want to pick the person or the people who run this government. They really want government by the elites. They don't want government by the people. They have government by the people now. They don't want that. They want a government run by people like George W. Bush and all of his friends, the ones who are cheering the defeat of or the cheering for the defeat, future defeat of Donald Trump or the failure of Donald Trump. They prefer that. We're going to take a break. 855-40-LAURA. Snobs like him. Part of the reason Trump got elected. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
We have to reject the arrogance of Washington, D.C. that looks down on everyday hardworking people, and that's what's happening. Too often, those who have power have disdain for the views, beliefs, and attitudes of those who don't have any political power. Those in leadership must put themselves in the shoes of the laid-off factory worker, the family worried about security, or the mom struggling to afford child care.
I think it's status anxiety.
You are listening to the Laura Ingraham Show, 855-40-LAURA, a man who has never suffered from status anxiety. Our friend, author extraordinaire, author of the new book, Citizen Newt. We're going to have him on next week when it's out. But before that, Craig Shirley, biographer, is with us now. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Status anxiety. I mean,
status status envy?
Yeah. Status anxiety, status envy.
Nope, I don't have status envy.
This is
I don't think either of us do.
No.
We both grew up children of blue-collar America, and I'm very proud that my father was a city firefighter for so many years.
When you hear people like this Williamson speaking with such utter condescension and disdain toward blue-collar Americans, working-class Americans, it does remind you, again, of course, what propelled Trump. I mean,
sure, absolutely.
People are just sick of this.
Absolutely. That's a fairly recent phenomenon, too. You know, for 200 years, this country appreciated men and women who worked with their hands and who didn't shower in the morning, but they showered in the evening when they got home. And there was a great celebration of the working man and working woman of America, and that was the backbone of what of the arsenal of democracy in World War II. I never remember anything but my father being proud of what he did, my being proud of what he did, and we were from a neighborhood where everybody was blue collar. They're the firefighters or they're cops, sanitation workers. But they're all proud of what they did, and they all, raised their children to aspire to better things and more things. But there was nothing shameful about doing it, and they never felt like their own government hated them.
Yeah, and I think that unfortunately, when you have comments like, "Well, none of these white men in Long Island are going to be picking avocados," the subtext.
Is there some shame in picking avocados?
Right, is that they're lazy. They're lazy. They're not as good as foreign workers or illegal immigrant labor. And work is too good for them. I always say to people
These are the guys who attacked upstate New York. I grew up in upstate New York, and upstate was murdered by that type of thinking and those type of people. When I was growing up, there was Kodak, there was Bausch & Lomb, there was Crucible Steel, there was Beechnut, there was all sorts of, there was Carrier, there was Xerox, the typewriter company, big typewriter company that was located in Cortland, New York, whose name escapes me, but that went to Mexico. That type of elitist thinking destroyed upstate New York. Upstate New York, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, you remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life,
oh,
right?
Oh, so great. Yes.
Capra was from upstate New York,
yep.
And he based Bedford Falls on Seneca Falls. And every town and city in upstate New York looked just like Bedford Falls. It had Ben Franklin's, it had Kresge's, it had building and loans, it had banks, it had the center of the local economy was the downtown. Stable, where all the economics generated from. And every town when I was growing up looked just like, that's not an exaggeration. And they're all decimated now. They're all ghost towns. They've all been, suffering from what they call now is brain drain, is that kids go off to college and they never go back home.
Well, and I guess their response is, you're stupid for not moving. If you're still there and complaining, You're just part of the new Republican grievance culture. Now, I want to play a soundbite for you. This is from Steve Schmidt, another perpetual loser when it comes to predictions. Steve Schmidt on MSNBC.
Don't sugarcoat it, Laura. What
Sorry,
really...
it's Monday and I'm doing book proof edit, so I'm really in a good mood.
Oh, been there, done that.
Oh no, I don't even want to look at it anymore. But this is what Steve Schmidt said today. Let's listen.
I'm old enough to remember when the Republican Party was the party of personal responsibility, and that one of the critiques of liberalism in that era was that the Democrats were the party of victims, that it was the party of grievance. And to watch the Republican Party, and particularly under this president, become the victim party, become the grievance party, there's always someone doing something to Donald Trump. He's perpetually and forever the victim. And from a character perspective, you've just never seen that type of weakness as a virtue manifested by the American head of state and the commander in chief of the world's most potent military.
Your reaction to the overall
point.
Well,
this has become, the Trump du jour complaint is that somehow he's a victim. I've seen some columns out there, striking this tone. I've seen other commentary strike this tone. Is that it is illogical to deny that there are people who are opposed to Donald Trump, either on personal level or on ideological level, political level, whatever. And so for him to talk about it, look, every president has talked about the opposition to him. Going back to Adams and Jefferson. Is that to deny it is just to deny the obvious.
You know, and I think that the idea that the American people don't have a right to be frustrated, just after your remembrance of your time in upstate New York, my time in Connecticut growing up, or New England,
right.
What's happened to these communities? I mean, no one voted for these policies. These weren't policies that the American people heard on the campaign trail.
Do you want to ship overseas good blue-collar jobs so that corporations can reap more profits?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever asked your parents or my parents to vote on that plebiscite.
We're going to talk now about the change of staff at the White House. It's something that happens regularly, and people leave, people come, go, reset button. But this was a pretty quick term for Reince Priebus. What was your sense about how he was dismissed, historical context? Have you ever seen anything like the Scaramucci character who came out with these horrible comments and profanity?
There have been, in the 20th century, there have been frank-talking staffers who were quickly shown the door. There have been revolving doors. FDR went through a lot of staff in the first and second term of his presidency. LBJ went through a healthy number of staff. So did Nixon. Mm-hmm. Nixon usually would reassign them, though, instead of, you know, making them ambassador to Estonia or something mm-hmm. like that, you know. This might be a new something new under the sun, which we haven't seen before, where he's using vulgarities as modifiers, as nouns, as verbs, as adjectives.
I mean, it wasn't exactly a put your arm around the
auspicious beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not auspicious.
Well, we talked to Buchanan about this. I've talked to others like Ed Rollins about this. What is the role of a communications director? The role is not the enforcer of leaking protocol or.
No, he is the enforcer of the message of the day. You and I have talked about this before. The way we used to do it in the Reagan days was that the message of the day, message discipline. The president's going to talk today about national energy policy, and then the whole cabinet would talk. It would be all mm-hmm. be coordinated by the director of communications. Then everybody in the cabinet, every elected Republican in the Congress would talk about it. The Republican National Committee would talk about it. Everybody was singing from the same sheet of paper. That's what the director of communications did, basically, was to coordinate the message.
Yeah, it's not to put on the heavy via threatening tweets
not,
or phone
not
calls.
To, you know, take a Sicilian vow of, knocking out, staffers if they don't toe the line.
And I'm going to call the FBI on you. I'm going to call my mom. My brother's going to come beat you up. I mean, oh, come on. It's these empty threats and the hyperventilation. I'm kind of tired of that routine.
It's a very Wall Street approach.
Oh, yeah. It's not, this isn't the wolf of Wall Street here. This is ridiculous. Craig, it's always great to have you on. Can't wait to talk to you next week, the week after as well, about Citizen Newt. Fabulous book. Talk about a necessary history lesson, given what's happening on Capitol Hill now. Craig Shirley, as always, thanks so much. When we come back, were you a guilty mother, feeling guilty all the time?